I'm talking with Utah Symphony music director Terry Fisher about this weekend's season opener, which features music by Beethoven and John Adams. Beethoven is considered one of the major composers in the history of music. What makes him so significant?
I think he managed, if you look only at the symphonies, to open new doors every symphony he was writing. If you see the journey made in terms of classical style, from the first symphony to the ninth, is like going through several planets within not even 30 years, I mean, less. And what makes him so significant is probably that he's very radical in his writing, and he doesn't compromise with his ideas, and he took the freedom, the artistic freedom, artistic creativity to reinvent new ways of writing music. Like, just one very small example, and we'll probably talk more in details later. In the first eight symphonies, he's writing in a very classical way with the exposition of the first movement, and then repeat, development, re-exposition, coda. In the ninth symphony, the first movement has no repeat, no re-exposition. It's absolutely stupefying. It's like a huge overture with different elements flying around very strongly for 15, 16 minutes. And this symbolic example shows his way of putting a human perspective in musical writing. It's not, you know, being writing in style with the habits of the time he was living. Like, if you see Mozart or Haydn, you know, they're all fantastic, creative, with humor, with drama, and Mozart, humor, and Haydn, and they're all different, but they're all having the same same structure, with the scherzo and a trio. Like in Beethoven 9, he doesn't write scherzo, first of all, so we guess it's a scherzo. It's not the third movement, but it's the second, and the trio is in 2-4, it's not in 3-4, which is radically new. Yeah. And it's brilliant. So he's, I guess, his anti-conventionalism has made it an icon, and he's still somehow, via his music, and talking only about the symphonies, but he did the same in the string quartets, in the piano sonatas, which I know less, but it's just an extraordinary musical journey, which is probably unheard of, and is still, you know, a reference.
Well, it seems that his big contributions were the symphony, string quartet, piano sonata, where he really took the classical structure and really turned it into towards the Romantic era.
Oh, definitely, he's announcing so many things. Many composers, even Wagner, I'm sure was influenced. I mean, not I'm sure, we know was influenced. If you listen to Beethoven 9, third movement, which we are performing this weekend, I mean, so many things make us thinking, even this morning when we were rehearsing, of what Wagner is going to write. And they, he's not sure, it's a bit obscure if they really met or not in Vienna, because there was this rivality with Rossini and Beethoven at the end of his life when he wrote Beethoven 9, and they met, and there's always obscure definitions of the way of reading, if they met or not. But I mean, he really influenced very, very strongly other composers.
Well, it seems in a lot of his, especially his later works, he really looks ahead even past the 19th century into the 20th century. I think they even influenced early 20th century composers.
Absolutely. That's the characteristic of people with vision. They open new worlds. It's like Schoenberg did. It's like, yeah, Beethoven, Schoenberg, some others. But, I mean, I think as much as I love Mendelssohn, and I'm a huge fan and love performing his music, I think the musical world could live without referring to Mendelssohn, or if he, by accident, he wouldn't have existed. You know, it's fine. The musical history development would still have been the same. But we can absolutely not say this about Beethoven. It's a radical, radical opening of minds for generations after him.
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, you're reading the Ninth Symphony this weekend. It is probably one of his best known and probably most played works. What appeal does it have to today's audiences?
I guess the first thing is this fraternity message with the choral and this dimension it has taken because of this urge for peace that you know it has been developed through the years, and now this symphony is used for good or less good reasons, you know, for tragic events or for special ceremonial events. We know that Beethoven was thinking of putting voice and singers for long in one of his symphonies, and it was a constant turmoil for him. Shall I do this? Yes or no? We know for sure that he tried to do this in the Pastoral Symphony already. And then he was hesitating, and then he met this Schiller, Ode to Joy, and he was singing it first with friends, and then it came, and then he didn't know where to put it, you know, before the second movement, after, and I read some letters that showing that he really didn't know how to put this voice element in the symphony, and suddenly he realized how he had to start it. And that's also the reason that in the last movement, after the Recit, or during the Recit in the beginning, he's quoting the first movement, podium, podium, podium. In the middle of the Recit, he's quoting the second movement, he's quoting the third movement, just for two bars, you know. It's just, it shows his turmoil, you know, and, you know, shall I go on, shall I not go on, shall I stop, and then so on.